Hello, and you're very welcome to Shanksmere here in Dunfanaghy, on the northern tip of lovely Donegal. Our view out towards the Atlantic leads us to Tory Island, whilst the west of us is the burnt orange colours that make up the bloody foreland. Well, this week we're looking at something very special indeed, a unique habitat which attracts rare and wonderful plant and animal species. There's only 40,000 hectares of it in the world, and Ireland has 10,000 hectares of that. And it is mocker, a coastal habitat made up of shells of animals which lived in the seas. Well, later on I'll be walking on the mocker site with local naturalist Liz Shepherd, but before that I'm going to visit Ewan Barry, who has written about this habitat for an exhibition in the local Workhouse Museum here in Dunfanaghy.
Most of this sand was created during the last ice age.
And I've come into the workhouse and I'm joined by Ewan Barry. Ewan, you wrote all the information for this exhibition. It's on the New Lake. What exactly is the New Lake?
New Lake is a recently formed lake that formed in the last century. And it's an area just beside Dunfanaghy town in County Donegal. And just beside the New Lake is a sand dune system that also sort of runs into Horn Head, which is an area renowned for high sea cliffs and its seabird population.
We're standing in front of the map here and you can see Horn Head. Bang in the middle of the land is this New Lake. What was the history of the development of this?
Well, New Lake was originally an estuary up until the 20s or 30s. And then what happened was the marram grass and the sand dune system was cut. As a result of the grass being cut, the sand started to move, and it moved in very large quantities and actually cut off the estuary from the sea, so that it became a lake and it filled up with fresh water as opposed to seawater.
So one of the main functions of marram grass is to secure the sand and to avoid that happening.
And that's right, yeah. It's, how marram grass works is once it takes root, it rises through the sand as the sand is blown up over the top of it, and it leaves this network of roots behind it, which is extremely strong and just forms a sort of structure within the sand dune which holds it together. So it's extremely important for sand dune systems.
It's not known how old exactly the oldest of the dunes at Dunfanaghy are, but it is likely that they are between 4,000 and 6,000 years old. This is the story of the evolution of this sand system and the life that depends on it.
What's extraordinary is, when looking at the map, you have the New Lake, and then in between the shoreline to the west and the New Lake is this mocker habitat.
That's right. The mocker is a very interesting habitat, which is unique to the northwest of Ireland and also the Hebrides in Scotland. And it's basically low-lying grassland areas, which you get behind the sand dunes, the main sort of ridge of sand dunes, which you get along the beach. And it has very distinctive plant population, and it's also a very good habitat for birds, particularly in the winter, because the mocker at Dunfanaghy, because of the high rainfall in this area, tends to be very wet, and it floods in winter to form what are called dune slacks, which are just shallow pools in between the dunes. And these are very good for overwintering birds and also for nesting birds in the summer.
And here is a photograph of the shifting sands.
That's right. Top one there is taken from around Horn Head Bridge. You can see what was the old school at Horn Head Bridge. And even there, it's almost engulfed in sand completely.
It's fascinating. This is a map from 1905. It looks like a winter in Canada. I mean, the snow, it looks like snow just building up beside the walls.
Yeah, and I've actually seen some even more dramatic ones than that, where there's kind of wider view and just the whole of Horn Head is just white.
What is surprising also is the variety of habitats that you find here.
That's what really makes this area unique, because on the one hand you've got a sand dune system, very extensive sand dune system, but right beside that you've got the lake and all the seabird, the water birds that would be associated with that. But then up above to the north of that area you've got Horn Head, which is high sea cliff environment where you've got puffins and razorbills and also peregrine falcons up there. And you also get corncrakes up around Horn Head as well.
So we've come up now to the Tremore Dune System, which is the area that the exhibition covers, and I'm joined by local naturalist Liz Shepherd. Liz, we're standing just over a small, tiny bridge with about, is it about 9 arches in it?
It's actually got 12 eyes in it. And
12.
This used to be the spot where people could stand and watch the tide surging up the estuary. And it used to be quite a spectacle, apparently. And at that stage, what's now the new lake was the head of the estuary. But during the First World War, the marum grass was cut around here in huge quantities. And of course, marum grass is what holds the ground and the soil together. And the grass was sent out to France during the war to provide bedding for horses. And after that, the network that held the sand together was obviously weakened. And in a winter storm shortly after that, the sand blew right across the neck of the estuary and cut off what's now the new lake. It also silted up the whole of the area around Dunfanaghy Harbour, and seagoing ships couldn't use the harbour anymore. But it was an ill wind that blew no good, because the new lake has become a wonderful sanctuary for geese and swans and all sorts of ducks, especially in the winter time. It's a wonderful place to birdwatch in the winter time.
It's hard to describe exactly what the new lake is. It's a trapped lake inland, isn't it?
It used to be the head of the estuary. It would have been a saltwater marsh at that time. Now it's a freshwater lake, and you can see here the water in front of us is flowing out under just 2 eyes in the bridge, because
it's a tiny trickle of water now.
Yeah, the other 10 eyes have all got blocked up with sand.
And this is a really good example to show what has gone on here, that the marum grass was cut, the sand then came in. What was a very wide movement of water now has been, as you said, reduced to 2 arches.
Yes, and there's no seawater coming up at all. So we have a lovely contrast now between the freshwater lake at the top of the estuary, which is now the new lake, and the saltwater bay down in Dunfanaghy Harbour. So again, you get different birds in the wintertime, different habitats. It's a wonderful expanse of sand and mud flat down at Dunfanaghy Harbour. And the new lake is, of course, surrounded by these wonderful dunes as well. So you get the birds at the back of the new lake, the breeding waders, and it's just a wonderful place at any time of year. But I suppose now at this time of year, what we're mainly looking at is the wildflowers, because this is when the Maher grassland at the back of the dunes comes into its own.
I remember coming here about 6 years ago for the first time, and you come over this bridge, and if no one told you that there was a walk here, you wouldn't stop your car or stop walking. Essentially, you just see a large patch of grassland with a small river to the left. But what's over where we can see is really spectacular.
It's really... what makes this area for me is its wilderness feel, because in many of our wonderful sand dune systems now, they have been destroyed in so many ways, with caravan parks and golf courses. But this area here at Tremore is still very much left to nature. And of course, there's one important thing about Maher grassland and sand dunes, and that is that they do have to be lightly grazed. So the fact that there are some cattle down here most of the year is actually what's keeping this area in good heart. Never heavily grazed, but light grazing is what keeps the vegetation going in the natural way.
The reason this place is so special is, as you say, because of the Maher habitat. What exactly is a Maher habitat?
The Maher is a very special thing. The Maher actually means a plain, and it's the flat, sandy, windswept area that spreads out on the landward side of the sand dunes. And it's very special because it's only actually found in along the western fringes of Scotland in the Hebrides, and in Ireland from Donegal down to Galway. It's a very particular habitat and a very particular vegetation type. And it's also the natural grassland which gives us, I think it's really like the steppes, you know. It's our equivalent of the steppes or the African savanna. It's our most natural grassland. So it's where you get wonderful spreads of wildflowers, and it's where you get most of our butterflies.
How does it develop? How in the past has it developed?
Well, the sand, first of all, builds up on the edge of the beach. First of all, it's caught by coarse grasses like the sand couch, and then the marram grasses move in, which build the dunes. And you know that how the marram grass builds the dunes, how it goes up higher and higher, and as the sand blows around the marram stems, it sends out a higher web of roots, and so one marram plant can actually go on up and up until it's 20 metres above where it started.
Yeah.
So then you've got you can see them over here, these lovely rolling dunes, and then on the landward side of that, as the sand blows in, it spreads out across the plain, and it's always in a very windswept environment where it's very close shaved, and this is where you get very ground-hugging plants. It's a very lime-rich area, and because of all the sand, and so the mosses and the things like birdsfoot, trefoil, and kidney vetch, which are they'll help to build up the nitrogen in the soil, and all of these plants make a wonderful network.
And the maher itself, am I right in saying that it's derived from calcareous material, like fish bones and material from the sea?
Yes, the sand is actually created by when the ice sheet during the last ice age scraped across the landscape and created the ground up the rock into sand. And that became mixed with fragments of bone and shell, which is basically what sand is. And it's the fragments of bone and shell that give it the limey content, which makes this environment so special.
How common is this type of habitat in Ireland and elsewhere?
It's very special.
I'm going to say, how rare is it? Not common.
It's pretty rare because it's only found, as I say, along the fringes of Donegal, Mayo, Galway, and in the Scottish Hebrides. Nowhere else. A tiny percent. We'll settle for a tiny percent.
What kind of plant species are typically associated with maher habitat?
Well, the spectacular ones, of course, are the orchids. And when you say orchid, people often think of a great big showy blossom that you might buy in a flower shop. But the orchids that you get in the wild are very small, especially in windswept areas. I mean, you get taller ones in other habitats, but here they're ground-hugging, but they're absolutely beautiful, and you have to get down close to appreciate them. And they come in lovely colours of pink and magenta and purple and sometimes white.
And so they must like this calcareous habitat, like the burn. You find orchids in the burn, which is limestone as well.
You do get orchids in different types of habitats, but the main thing about orchids is that they must have unfertilized, unimproved habitats. If you came in here with bags of fertilizer, your orchids would disappear. There's a very special orchid here. The bee orchid is a wonderful plant which imitates a bee, and it's got a lovely little velvety flower, browny coloured flower with gold markings, and it looks like a bumblebee. So the bee lands on the bee orchid and tries to mate with it, and it helps to spread the pollen.
It's so mean, that, isn't it? Poor bee.
But orchids have got such tiny seeds, they really haven't got enough food store to push a plant up without gathering some sort of sustenance from something else. So every orchid seed teams up in the soil with a particular fungus, and they live off each other. The fungus grows more in winter, and the seed gathers strength in summer, and eventually, sometimes it takes up to 15 years for the orchid to push its leaves up above the ground. Some species are 4 years, but anything between 4 and 15. Now the bee orchid takes about 9 or 10 years, and it only flowers once after all that effort. But there's an amazing story which I must tell you about a party of school teachers, no less, who were in this very area being introduced to the joys of wildflowers. And one of them came up with a little bunch of flowers to the leader of the group and said, "What are these?" And you know, she had picked half of the bee orchids that hadn't been seen in Donegal at that stage for 50 years.
Oh, that's terrible.
And it's actually a wonderful cautionary tale because it's been told to so many people now that people don't pick orchids around here anymore.
Terrible, isn't it?
Well, I don't even know who it was at this stage, but her deed has certainly gone down in history. And bee orchids have been seen in Donegal a few times since then, but they're very sporadic, they're very unpredictable, and very strange because they could turn up in four different locations in Donegal all in the same year, and then you wouldn't see them for 10 years. But anyhow, the bee orchids that were picked were right down there beside the bridge that passed.
That's incredible, though. It only flowers once every 10 years.
It takes it that length of time to build up the strength to push itself through the soil. And some orchids will develop a tuber which will help them to go on blooming for a few years after that, so they will come up in the same spot. But apparently the bee orchid only does it once.
Oh, and the story of the fungus, that's a sort of symbiotic relationship they
both
have.
Absolutely, yes. Every orchid has its own special fungus. So there would be no point, for instance, in taking orchid seed and popping it into soil that didn't have the host fungus, because it wouldn't grow there. So they're very, very choosy characters and very much associated with the Maher.
And school teachers. Let's keep walking. And Liz, we've just come to a small outlet where the water flows down just before we hit the actual maher itself. On the left, I see some flag irises.
Yeah, they're beautiful things. They're just in full bloom at this time of year. And you can just see a few marsh orchids here just at the other side. It's a study really in yellows, I think, at this time of year, with specks of purple in the tapestry.
Just down here is a small purple orchid. What's this called?
That's the marsh orchid. They're very much associated with this habitat as well. You know, they're particularly found in the Maher, and they come in a variety of shades.
Just beside it here is a small beetle, and I remember when I was last here being struck by the variety of unusual insects that are found here, the moths, a lot of snails, and beetles as well. So you find not only an unusual diversity of plant species, but also insects.
Well, this is the thing, where you get a diversity of natural plants, you're going to get all the insects as well, and of course they feed the birds. So this is why the plants are very much part of the food chain. They'll be providing the pollen and the nectar and the caterpillar food plants for particular butterflies. And everything is a whole cycle. And if you go out and pick all the wildflowers, then you're cutting off part of that food supply for the insects. But you mentioned snails. The snails are very interesting because, I don't know, have you noticed when you go along that snail shells that you find are in totally different colours? You get yellow ones, you get white and black and dark blue and spirals in different colours. And they're all made out of the same material, which is obviously the lime in the sand. So these little creatures manage to create all these colours out of the same material. And of course the lime in the sand comes originally from seashells. So this is actually a type of recycling.
Yeah. What's amazing about the orchid here is how small they are. If we walk down here, there's another marsh orchid just in front of us. It could only be about 2 inches high.
Nothing here can lift its head very high, because you can imagine what the wind is like out here in the wintertime. Not that the orchids are blooming then, but all the vegetation has got this close-shaved look about it.
So keep your head low and you'll be protected. Just in front of us is an incredible variety of plants. We see the marsh orchids, a little bit bigger now. Yes. There's about 20 of them in front of us. Yes. A lovely variety of yellow plants and also these white plants. Yes. I can't say more than that because I'm not too sure what they are. What are these white plants in front of us?
Yes, we've got bird's foot trefoil, we have buttercup, we have the beautiful example over there of the marsh orchid, and we have tiny little things coming up, various other little speedwells. It's just a lovely tapestry of yellows and with odd specks of blue.
It that's incredible as well, to come across in a dune system, to come across such colour.
Yes, it is. That's what people don't realise. You look at a dune from the distance and you don't really... you've got to get up close to appreciate this. And if we go poking through, we'll probably find there's a little spider going through. And
oh, there he is. If we bend down here, I'm going to pick it up.
Isn't he? He's probably a moth caterpillar. Yes, beautiful green and black.
Sort of lime green colour.
And look how he's curled into a tiny ball to roll around in the palm of your hand.
Liz, as we come up the dune, you see the increased number of mosses. It's a bit of a contradiction, is it not, to have mosses in a dune system?
Well, it's very interesting. Mosses were one of the first plants to colonise the earth. They're very, very ancient plants. And if you look at a moss, if you pull out a strand of moss, it doesn't have a real root, it doesn't have flowers, it doesn't have seeds. It spreads itself by putting out tiny pieces of itself, if you like, which require water to spread. So they do need damp conditions, but out here there's enough rain. So this is why they managed to survive. And also you won't get them on the dunes right next to the sea. It's when you come in here to where we are at the minute, where the more fixed dunes, as they're called, are developing, that you get the mosses.
We're just climbing a dune here. This wouldn't be facing the wind with the sea salt in it.
No, exactly. This is where you start off with the four dunes, then you have the Marram dunes, the very tall ones, and then you have what we've got here, which are the fixed dunes.
And if we look back, we are a bit higher up now, and we can see in front of us the town of Dunfanaghy, and to the right here, the new lake.
Yes, this is a great viewing point for the new lake. We're just coming up to it now. You can see the swans dotted across it. Now, of course, the swans that you get here at this time of year are the mute swans. In the winter time, we have huge flocks of hooper swans coming in from Iceland.
It's just amazing to think that this would have been completely separated. Hornhead would have been separated as an island.
Yes. Hornhead would have been... it was probably because the land rose up, or the huge quantities of sand settled in after the Ice Age. But between 4,000 and 6,000 years ago, this whole system would have joined Hornhead on to the rest. But you have a lovely view of the lake here. And, of course, where we're standing now is the place where you get a lot of wild geese in winter. They use the lake and they use all this grassland around here. And you get particularly the Greenland white-fronted geese from Greenland, and also the barnacle geese, which come from Greenland as well. Down in Dunfanaghy Harbour, which is much more tame environment, if you like, you get the Brent geese, which are from Canada. So it's a great meeting place for wild geese.
And Liz, just behind us, you can hear the gorgeous sound of the skylark trying to impress his wife, maybe?
The skylark is, for me, the sound of summer on the dunes, as the wild geese are the sound of winter. And that's a gorgeous song. You know that song can go on without a breath for about 4 minutes?
Oh, it's so amazing to hear them. And they do that in mating time to impress mates.
Yes, it's their mating flight. They always fly into the wind and they move up higher and higher and higher, hovering a little at each point, and they can go up to 100 metres. And then they sing coming down again until they reach just a few metres above the ground, and then they suddenly drop down. But it's a wonderful sound of summer. And actually, I only discovered recently that they're doing it not just to impress their lady friends, but they are actually listened to by birds of prey. And the birds of prey will notice how long and how strong the song is, and they obviously will go for the weaker birds.
Oh, that's fascinating.
I just heard that story recently, so I assume someone must have studied it in huge detail. Oh, look, there's a pyramid orchid. That's a beautiful little thing. It's just like a pyramid. It's a much more, it's a pinkier colour, but it's a very special little thing.
Oh, it's so elegant, isn't it? And at the bottom of it, you can see it's a very, very small creature. What's that?
A little frog hopper.
Little frog hopper at the bottom of it.
That's the little thing that lives inside a cuckoo's bit. They're the little protections that a frog hopper will have around its... That one obviously has somehow fallen out of its cuckoo's bit. But if you open up a cuckoo's bit, you'll find one of those little things inside.
That programme was first broadcast in June 2005. Shanksmere was presented and produced by Ella McSweeney. Next week, Ella will be in Galleyhead in West Cork to catch a glimpse of whales and dolphins.